Please welcome Jerry Whitaker.
Thank you, Kent, and good morning, everyone. Of course, I was here last night, if you were at the SBE meeting, and talking about classic technologies. Today, for my day job presentation, we're going to talk about new technologies for today and tomorrow for broadcasting. There's a lot to talk about, actually. ATSC, as you'll hear, has been around for nearly three decades now. Our first published standard, A49, ghost-canceling reference signal for NTSC, and that was our first and only analog-based standard. But we've got a lot going on. I'm going to hit some of the high points. And just as important what I'm talking about, also perhaps what I'm not talking about. The last time I was here for an SBE national convention, I can't remember, had some co-located with WBA, I think. The topic was we were pushing PSIP. We're trying to get PSIP right. PSIP. There was no ATSC presentation that did not include those four letters. Well, I'm not going to say anything about PSIP today. We can check that off. I think we figured that out. We got it right. But we have new challenges. ATSC Mobile DTV, I'll talk about that, give you an overview. Now, the next presentation, Jay Adrick and Wayne Luplow will go into Mobile DTV in some detail. I'll hit the highlights and set the stage for them. ATSC 2.0 is a grouping of new services for broadcast television. That's an effort is well underway. It's exciting work, new capabilities for the existing system. 3D TV standardization is well underway. We have one element of that currently at ballot. And then there's ATSC 3.0, which is the next generation broadcast television system. And you may have heard of FOB TV, Future of Broadcast Television, and that initiative is moving along, and I'll cover that as well. So first, a little bit about ATSC. Some of you are, I'm sure, quite familiar with it. Others, perhaps not as much. ATSC is the Standards Development Organization for Digital Television, founded in 1983 by the Consumer Electronics Association, the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, National Association of Broadcasters, National Cable and Telecommunications Association, and the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers. We are focused on digital terrestrial distribution of television. ATSC is an open due process organization, about 135 member organizations, and it's international in scope and it's broad in its scope of disciplines, which include broadcasters, broadcast equipment vendors, cable and satellite system operators, consumer electronics and semiconductor manufacturers, universities, and others. No ATSC presentation is complete without an org chart. Here it is. You can say you saw it. The board of directors manages the activities of the organization, and there are three main groups within that structure: planning teams, technology group one, and technology group three. Well, planning teams, it's blank right now. There were three planning teams. I'll explain what they have done. Planning teams come and go. We try and not perpetuate committees. If there's no reason for the committee to continue meeting, we are more than happy to shut them down and focus on other things. Technology group one is focused on ATSC DTV. It's divided up into the disciplines you see, and I won't get into much detail. We'll focus more on what the committees have done as opposed to who they are. But in brief, they're broken into disciplines of ATSC mobile, audio and video coding, service content protection, transport, transmission, receivers, ATSC 2.0, 3D TV, and data broadcast. Technology Group 3 is a new group, and I'll have a number of slides on that later. There are two specialist groups in that structure: scenario planning and the physical layer. This is an eye chart. Don't expect to remember much from it other than there's a lot of active groups. This happens to be the TG1 specialist groups and ad hoc groups, and a lot of very smart, very hardworking individuals leading the effort and contributing to the work. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of resources to develop a standard, and a standard that has to endure for many years, perhaps even decades. And so from that standpoint, if we're going to develop a standard, we have to do it right, and we have to do it right the first time. And so projects don't just happen. There is a plan, and here is the plan. The board of directors can come up with a concept they think needs to be developed. Other interested parties can bring things to ATSC, or a planning team can develop requirements which it proposes to the board, which develops into a new work item proposal. Now, the planning teams I mentioned earlier, there were three that closed down about a year ago. One was focused on internet television. That work has been folded into work on ATSC 2.0. It was ongoing at the time. Another planning team was focused on 3D TV. That resulted in a new work item proposal, and work is now underway on 3D. And a planning team on next generation broadcast television, and that resulted in ultimately the creation of the Technology Group 3. The board then reviews, approves a work item proposal and assigns it to the technology group, which assigns it to a specialist group or creates one to do the work. the point I want to make here in this slide is that, well, first of all, some labels. A working draft is what the specialist group does. It is developed with input from all members of the group. This is the heavy lifting. The document is created, the words are drafted and reviewed, sometimes endlessly. But the idea is to come up with you know, a proper, clear description of the technology so someone can go out and build it and have it work and have it interoperate. And that's the primary reason for a standards development organization anyway. So the working draft is that document that that looks like a standard. It's not quite a standard yet, but it's very close. Then it can become a candidate standard, in which case it's made public, distributed widely, hopefully, and implementers get a crack at putting it on the air or otherwise testing it. And we may find after that process or during that process, you know, we need to change this or we need to change that. And so it's a iterative process. There's feedback involved. A proposed standard is pretty much what it sounds like. It's almost there, almost baked, almost finished, and finally the standard. At each step, it goes the document, the specification goes from one step to the next by consensus or two-thirds vote. And that's important in an SDO like ATSC because our membership is so broad. A standard involving television isn't just the broadcaster, it's not just the receiver, it's the broadcaster and the receiver, and maybe MSOs have a point part to play, and maybe the production community has a part to play. So it's important that all the stakeholders are, number one, involved, and number two, buy off on the concept. ATSC A53, which was approved in 95, the DTV system, has served as the foundation for digital television today, of course, and it's also serving as a foundation for evolutionary improvements. Beginning with ATSC DTV, the base layer, if you will, high definition video, standard definition video, of course, multiple streams done regularly, a multi-channel sound. We're building on top of that base to add mobile DTV. That's here, it's now, it's on the air. It's a commercial enterprise. We're also adding ATSC 2.0 and we're adding 3D TV. The A53 standard, of course, beginning at the physical layer, it's VSB 19.4 megabits per second is the bit pool we have to work with in 6 megahertz channels. Transport layer is MPEG-2. A65 specifies PSIP. I'll say no more about PSIP since we got it right. A90 specifies data broadcast, and A70 conditional access. Those are our document numbers, as you probably know. The presentation layer, or essence, MPEG-2 video, HD and SD. Audio is AC3, surround, and A72 specifies the use of MPEG-4 AVC for those who want to use it. Oops, what did I do? Back. There we go. Okay, so let's drill down a little bit and look at those three elements that we're focused on now, which is mobile DTV, 3D, and ATSC 2.0. ATSC mobile DTV is a backwards compatible standard for the delivery of real-time and non-real-time television content to mobile devices. Services are on the air now. TV wherever you go, news, weather, sports, traffic, favorite channels. It's a real simple value proposition for the consumer. And those are the best ones. If you can describe what your product does in one sentence, then you have a pretty good chance for success. Live TV on your cell phone, everybody gets that. So mobile DTV is robust. It's got AVC video, IP transport, HEAC V2 audio coding. It's backwards compatible, services on the go, MEAS. Is under development. You are probably aware of this, but I think it's such a cool system that it bears repeating. ATSC mobile DTV services are carried in existing DTV channels, along with existing services, including high definition programming. No adverse impact on legacy receiving equipment. No additional spectrum is required. And mobile services are scalable in number and level of robustness. It's flexible and it is efficient. Taking the A53 slide and making it the A153 slide, we look something like this. Again, the physical layer is VSB, 19.4 megabits per second. We still have that bit pool that we can share between the mobile service and the fixed service, if you will. We're adding RF transmission and forward error correction with compatibility to legacy decoders and receivers. The transport layer is IP, streaming and non-real-time file delivery. An electronic service guide is based on OMA-BCAST. The presentation layer is MPEG-4 AVC, audio coding, as I mentioned, HEAAC V2, and of course, closed captioning. You may have seen this an article about this in the trades recently. On September 20th, the official launch of mobile DTV was held in the Rayburn Building on Capitol Hill. Highlighted the growing availability of ATSC mobile DTV services and receivers to government officials, the press, public. A lot of very cool receivers displayed as well. The A153 standard, parts 1 through 8, was approved in October of 2009, so that's been a few years now. In that time, we've continued to improve the standard, adding additional video coding options, adding a scalable full-channel mobile mode for principally non-broadcast applications. So a lot of work has been underway. We have some additional work that is underway, and a new part of A153 is being drafted now to specify a method of emergency alerting for DTV services that could be finalized before the end of 2012. Oh, I'll also mention you may be familiar with A154, which is the mobile DTV recommended practice. That was approved, I believe, earlier this year. It focuses principally on part 3, which is transport issues. We are in the process of expanding that to add guidance on mobile audio, so that could be completed before the end of this year. When I say completed, not necessarily published, but well on its way on with regard to approvals. There we go. I want to just say a little bit about mobile EAS. Jay Adrick, who is leading this effort in ATSC, in a subgroup of the specialist group on ATSC mobile DTV, will give you some more details in his presentation that follows mine. But in brief, MEAS is an enhancement for the mobile DTV standard for emergency information to mobile and handheld receivers, provides for real-time and non-real-time delivery, utilizes the common alerting protocol, CAP, I'm sure you're aware of that, familiar with that, and NRT is used to provide rich media assets. So that, that work is well underway. We're quite close to a solid working draft, and that work is moving along nicely. There's a broad array of mobile DTV receivers out there, phones, purpose-built devices, dongles, and so forth. So it's well supported. Boy, I'm having a bad time with that. There we go. Okay, so we've looked at mobile DTV, that evolutionary step. Another step in the evolution of ATSC is ATSC 2.0, which is a complete suite of new services for the fixed DTV receiver. The concept is we've got a lot of enhancements that we are doing, that we want to do, or that we have already done. So let's bundle these together under an umbrella to more fully exploit the capabilities of the system we already have. And those capabilities would include, but are not limited to, advanced audio and video compression, non-real-time delivery, conditional access, digital rights management, advanced EPG, audience measurement, hybrid TV, and second screen features. Now, this is quite a project because it involves a lot of different technologies, but the working draft is coming together. It could be completed first quarter next year. I want to drill down just a little bit on non-real time because that's interesting, useful, and it is here now. Earlier this year, we published a standard, our number is A103, for non-real time delivery of content to mobile and fixed receivers. NRT makes possible the delivery of content for storage on the device and consumption at a later point in time. When you stop and think about it, most broadcast programming really doesn't need to be delivered in real time. Sports and news, you know, the notable exceptions. But file-based delivery is quite practical, and it does address that desire for everything on demand. Storage and the reduction in storage costs and the increase in capacity and advanced compression technologies make this quite practical. Well, you can go down to Fry's or whatever your local electronics store is, and for $109 buy a 2 terabyte hard drive, you can see that while you're not going to find 2 terabyte hard drives in tablets, you get the idea. Moore's Law is working overtime. NRT services, there are a lot of things we can do with this system. Here's some: news, weather, traffic, sports clips. You imagine you have a service, a mobile service, that is news headlines. It would make a lot of sense to push that 5-minute news summary, let's say local news, weather, sports, whatnot, push it to the device so when the user wants to see it, it's there. The latest version is there. There's no waiting for a clock to say, okay, well, I've got to wait until, you know, the bottom of the hour for the news. You can have it when you want it. That's one example. We could do the same thing, of course, with long-form entertainment programming. Develop more interesting, more compelling electronic programming guides or telescoping ads or targeted advertising. There's a lot that can be done. As I mentioned earlier, it can be a component of a fixed service and or a mobile service. The other big evolutionary step that we're working on is 3D. The standard is well into development to facilitate terrestrial transmission and distribution of 3D content. It's very likely, it's a foregone conclusion, that it would multi-mode, if you will, or there'll be profiles that describe, you know, different ways of doing it. And there are a number of ways of doing it. One is where the 3D content, the 3D program is dependent upon the 2D. That is to say, you transmit your normal signal and you transmit one other eye. Or where the 3D program is independent of the 2D. Or mobile 3D, where it's, you know, glasses-free display, which is actually quite compelling. Or non-real-time delivery, file delivery of 3D TV. The working draft on 3D TV is being developed. One part has been finalized and is actually at its first ballot, and so it's moving along quickly. The standard is envisioned to be structured as a series of parts, each covering a different piece of that technology puzzle. Well, we've talked about evolution, but there's also a revolution out there, and we need to be ready for it. And that revolution for digital television is ATSC 3.0. ATSC 3.0 is the next generation of broadcast television. It is a fundamental technology shift. It needs to be very flexible and very efficient. Furthermore, ATSC 3.0 must provide performance improvement and additional functionality significant enough to warrant implementation of a non-backwards compatible system. There are a lot of time frame issues. Some are under the control of ATSC and broadcasters, many are not. They include regulatory spectrum issues. Kelly talked about that. There's technology issues. Is this technology ready for deployment, or is it still a lab curiosity? Business issues. How do we make money with this? Right now, we're looking at a green field. We're looking at a white chalkboard with nothing on it, and we're going to see where it leads us. About this time last year, the technology group on ATSC 3.0 was formed. It's led by Jim Kutzner from PBS. And like any group, it has a scope. And if you'll permit me, I'm going to read it because words are important in scope, and we do our very best to say precisely what we mean. So the scope of ATSC 3.0 is to develop voluntary technical standards and recommended practices for the next generation digital terrestrial television broadcast system. ATSC 3.0 is likely to be incompatible with current broadcast systems and therefore must provide improvements in performance, functionality, and efficiency significant enough to warrant implementation of a non-backwards compatible system. Interoperability with production systems and non-broadcast distribution systems could be considered, or rather should be considered. Okay, non-backwards compatible ought to get everybody's attention. It's pretty clear that ATSC 3.0 will focus on mobility, on reaching mobile receivers and platforms. And of course, if you can reach a mobile receiver, by definition, you can reach a fixed receiver. So we need system requirements. Before we can ask people to give us their great ideas, we need to guide them a little bit and tell them what we think the system needs to do. So a specialist group on system requirements has been formed, was formed earlier this year during the summer. Skip Peasy from NAB is the chair of that group. They've developed a call for input, which is distributed among ATSC members, asking for use cases for the next generation DTV system. If you could design a system, what would you like it to do? Okay, important questions. And these use cases will be used to develop usage scenarios and system requirements for ATSC 3.0. Now, So the data's coming in, it's being processed, there's a group that's working on that. The use cases are being shared with FOBTV, Future of Broadcast Television, which I've got a few slides about later. FOBTV is doing a similar process, but on a worldwide basis. An initial draft of system requirements is planned for completion by the end of this year. In standards development years timeline, that's pretty aggressive. And then there's a physical layer. Specialist group on the physical layer for ATSC 3.0 was formed during the summer. Luke Fay from Sony chairs that group. And of course, the physical layer is a tough one because it affects everything, not the least of which are spectrum issues. So Luke's group is focused on identifying target attributes and then how to evaluate those systems. Those are very important questions. The physical layer specialist group has a goal of issuing a call for proposals in January of next year. It's currently under review, that call for proposals. But before the call for proposals is issued, S2 will talk to S1 and make sure that we're all in sync with regard to use cases and scenarios and so forth. Touchy. There is growing interest, well, back to the use cases. So there have been a lot of use cases that have been proposed. There's a recurring theme, and better quality is a recurring theme. There's growing interest to have ATSC 3.0 support delivery of ultra high definition video, at least 4K, maybe 8K. The lessons of HDTV adoption are well remembered. HDTV was a big driving force in getting digital sets sold and getting ATSC receivers into people's homes. Consumers will always be attracted to high quality. And displays are practical. Now, you can't go down to Best Buy and purchase one. However, think about 1995 when A53 was approved, and think about high-definition displays of the day. Well, it was a CRT, number one, and number two, the big screen was 36-inch diagonal. We're in a completely different space today. Now, there's similar interest with regard to UHD TV for FOB TV. Okay, that way. Okay. There's a lot of additional work to be done on ATSC 3.0, we know that. We'll need to form a transport layer specialist group. We'll need to form an applications layer specialist group. We've got to develop deployment scenarios. And then there's the transition scenario. Okay, we know where we are, okay. In a year or so, we hope we know where we want to be. How do we get from one spot to the other? And, oh, yes, stay in business and keep making money. So it's a transition scenario is a tough nut to crack, but it's something we'll work on. There are other areas, other things that impact the work we do or how people might view a next-generation system, not the least of which is the integration of diverse connected devices. And those would be, you've got over the air, you've got cable, you've got satellite, you've got over the top, Hulu, Apple TV, Google TV, who am I leaving out? Netflix, you get the idea. And, oh, you've got local storage too. The consumer, I think, is getting to the point where he or she really doesn't care where it comes from, where the content comes from, as long as it's the content that they want. And it gets to them at the time they want to view it. So, timeline. this is quite a draft, if you will. It's looks at 4 years. I won't get into specifics other than to point out, where is it? 2016. Candidate standard, that would, through normal processes, put us with ATSC 3.0 standard being approved and published in mid-2016. 2016 actually kind of sounds like a long way off until you start thinking, oh, that's like 4 years. That's pretty close. Also, I'll note hardware testing could begin in 2015. There are other outside factors that we have little control over that could impact this. One is MPEG. Of course, you may be familiar with MPEG-H, HEVC, which is very attractive. That does not appear to be a long pole in the tent, however. The structure remains to be seen, but it's very likely going to look something like this. Of course, we'll have a physical layer with a broadcast and broadband element, common interface to the transport management layer, common interface to applications, which would no doubt include real-time and non-real-time. And then common coding, MPEG-H, HEVC, I suppose so. 3D audio, okay, that sounds interesting. Common encapsulation, delivery and control, MPEG-MMT looks really interesting. Common transport, IP, well, it's everywhere. There's a lot to be said for that. We're going to need interactivity and addressability. And then a common tool set, modulation error correction. A lot of work to be done. And you'll notice the common interface points. Our idea is to, now of course we have these in some form or fashion with A53 and A153. Any good, well-designed system has, you know, interface points where, you know, things connect. But we're looking to make these more broad and more universal in scope. And that's important because we'd like to develop this system not just for ATSC, but elsewhere, which brings me to FOB TV, the future of broadcast television. This organization was formed last year, and it has some objectives. They are to define the requirements of a future terrestrial broadcast system, explore unified terrestrial broadcast standards, and promote global technology sharing. Thinking forward to the ATSC 3.0, or whatever you'd want to call the next generation television system, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to invent three or four different ways of doing sort of the same thing. Wouldn't it make more sense if we developed a common standard? Well, that was the idea of FOB TV and the joint declaration that was signed last year, November 11, 2011, at 11:11 a.m. In Shanghai. It had a nice ring to it, didn't it? I mean, really, they had like a big countdown clock on the wall, and when it went to all ones, everybody applauded. signed by all these nice folks here, many of you may know. The signatories, it's a pretty impressive group here. Obviously, ATSC was involved, DVB, ETRI, NHK, SET, you get the idea. It's EBU, whoever, everybody who counts. There was a joint declaration, and here are some of the major points. First of all, why broadcasting? Well, broadcasting is the most spectrum-efficient wireless delivery means for popular real-time and file-based content. It has infinite scalability. If what we had now was Wi-Fi and the internet, if Wi-Fi and the internet had been invented before broadcasting, we'd be in a position where we'd have to invent broadcasting to efficiently get content to consumers. Wireless delivery of media content to an unlimited number of receivers makes terrestrial broadcasting a vital technology, not just in North America, or not just for ATSC countries, but around the world. Now, global standard has a lot of attractive benefits, not the least of which is mass production drives down the cost of each unit. A global standardization effort would also show the commitment of the broadcast industry to embrace new technologies and leverage interest from global technology developers to devise next generation products. Smart people out there and technologists who are looking for the next big thing and would like to invent it and make some money on it, presumably, are attracted by scale. And what better scale is there than global television? That's pretty big. Also, of course, mobile and handheld devices do cross borders. It would be nice if they worked as you traveled. So why now? Well, we know there are certain pressures on the broadcast industry in the United States. We're not alone among that. Broadcasters around the world are facing a number of challenges. Of course, industries are driven by new technologies, and we need to be a player there. Spectrum is sought after for broadband everywhere, and that puts pressure on the broadcast industry. Next generation technology, if we do this right, could provide a win-win-win situation. In April of this year, a memorandum of understanding was signed by the 13 founding organizations, and the goals were to develop future ecosystem models for terrestrial broadcasting, taking into account business, regulatory, and technical environments, to develop requirements for next generation terrestrial broadcast systems, to foster collaboration for development laboratories, to select major technologies to be used as the basis for new standards, and to request standardization of selected technologies or layers, you remember the layers, by existing SDOs such as ATSC, ARRIVE, DVB, and TTA. FOBTV is not a standards development organization. It's a coordination organization. There are a lot of people involved. It is a very impressive list. This slide is already out of date. There are some more people, more organizations that have joined FOBTV. I'll note that Mark Richer, who's the ATSC president, chairs the management committee of FOBTV. The vice chair is Phil Lavin from DVB. Which brings us back to the revolution of ATSC 3.0. This really is a defining moment for terrestrial broadcasting. Spectrum-efficient wireless delivery of media content to an unlimited number of receivers makes terrestrial broadcasting a vital technology now and in the future, even more in the future. Terrestrial broadcast technology needs to advance to be relevant in a changing world, and the world, of course, is changing very quickly. A global standard is clearly the preferred approach, if we can do it. There is very close ongoing liaison between TG3 and FOBTV. So, if you allow a few observations as I close, the television landscape is changing very quickly. Broadcasters must use new technologies to attract new viewers and to hold on to their existing viewers. A direct connection between stations and the consumer is the key to success going forward, and that means mobile. The demand for increased quality and quantity of services will continue to grow. And finally, if we don't plan for the future, we will no doubt be left out of it. I urge you to get involved in the work. There is a lot going on at ATSC. Mobile DTV, mobile EAS, 3D TV, ATSC 2.0, content protection, ATSC 3.0. Broadcast industry involvement is very important. We're looking for it all the time. So I urge you to get involved, stay involved. Your company may already be an ATSC member. If not, consider joining. Membership does have its privileges. And nothing says a good time like a standards development meeting, trust me. It's fun. It's what we do. So at any rate, there's more to come. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Jerry, have there been discussions within the group about a future, you know, ATSC 3.0 initiative and how it would, even though it won't be backwards compatible, I assume that there's been discussions about some sort of converter boxes for existing equipment or anything? Maybe converter box isn't a good term to use, but just, you know, thinking for myself as somebody who watches over the air, I'm not sure, you know, then would all my equipment all of a sudden become obsolete?
Yeah, that is that's a good question. We have the concept of a converter box has been forwarded. It's something that I expect when we get into the transition scenario phase. It's hard to imagine we could do a transition without some type of conversion mechanism. The challenge for developing ATSC 3.0 is to make the feature set so compelling that people will rush to the corner store to buy it. In which case, we're not pushing the technology; the consumers are pulling it. So our focus, you know, right now, is to come up with a system that, again, is so compelling that consumers can't wait to get it, and so we're in a different transition scenario arrangement. And there'll be, you know, some period of time where ATSC DTV is on the air and ATSC 3.0 is on the air. It's hard to imagine a flip the switch one day, but those are all tough issues, and input from broadcasters is really important.
Jerry, as we transition from ATS 3 and on to whatever comes out of FOB TV, is there much discussion going on about the practicality of software-defined receivers that can keep up with changing standards through firmware upgrades, possibly even over the air, so that we aren't stymied by these technological advances, by this installed base of legacy receivers that are not backward compatible, not upgradable?
Yeah, thanks for the question. The the software-defined radio is a very exciting concept. The receiver manufacturers that have participated so far have tried to dampen our enthusiasm for a complete software-defined radio that's cost-effective for the near-term future because of the technical complexity. Which means, well, cost and how long would it take to get this thing to work. Having said that, it's pretty clear that having gone through one transition and trying to plan a second transition, we don't want to do this again. We need to find some way of more gracefully going from one system to the other. now with the new physical layer, we'd like to get right at Shannon's limit. We won't get there, but we'll get close. But at some point in the future, somebody else is going to have a great idea and a new system, and it would be really good to be able to have that path so we could move from one system to the other, even a physical layer change, which is hard to accomplish, and not obsolete everything that's in the field. Yeah, it's a tough one, but it's very important.
Yes, two concerns. One of them is, you know, the obvious is we get crushed in spectrum. How are we going to be able to operate any sort of a transition? I think that's something that every one of us that's a licensee is pretty darn concerned about. The second is, why not just ditch 2.0 and go for the fence with 3.0 and get on with it?
Well, there's a lot of time between now and when ATSC 3.0 will be fielded, and there's tens, hundreds of millions, I don't know what the number is, of ATSC DTV receivers out there, and they won't go away soon. So the more we can do to extend the useful life of those devices and encourage people to upgrade to newer devices, newer receivers, and offer new services. Now, it's envisioned that pretty much everything in ATSC 2.0 will be ported over will be a component of 3.0. So it's not like that work is just going to go away in, you know, 2016. But we see a mobile service and ATSC 2.0 and 3D continuing to give broadcasters exciting technologies to work with. And then at some point, even if a standard is approved in 2016 on ATSC 3.0, it will be some period of time before stations get on the air, before there's a transition scenario that, you know, everybody, you know, works through. So we've got, I think it's important to get those new features to consumers, the ones that we can with the technologies that we're working with.
In a world where the 3-minute mile is now the standard in terms of technological development, a world where the wireless companies set the pace of expectation of new technologies and when they're brought online, is it possible, and I defer to this gentleman here, I think it elevated a very interesting point about moving on, is it possible that we can keep pace, or do we celebrate that we can run a 5-minute mile because we used to run a 7-minute mile? I think what concerns me is those people are competing for this very spectrum, and its utilization are not slowing down. They are speeding up. And I think what you showed is outstanding and exciting. But I'm very concerned that if even moving quickly, 2016 is when we can see things that we should have today. What can we do as broadcasters to make sure we're here in 2016 to make sure we can adopt ATSC 3.0?
Well, and that brings me back to ATSC 2.0 and 3D and mobile. we need to keep moving forward. If we stop moving forward, then we will be trampled. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. We have new technologies that we can field, and they are being fielded. And we'll hear in just a minute about mobile DTV, which is, you know, very exciting, a direct connection to the viewer, which is really important. So it's a ongoing process, and we can't out carrier the common carriers. But what we have something they don't have, and that is a 1-to-many, a 1-to-infinite, as opposed to a 1-to-1, and infinitely scalable, hardened facilities that don't go down when they're needed most. The wireless carriers, we'd love to have them at the table to talk about, okay, how can we work together? We're very good at distributing the Super Bowl and the nightly news and debates and entertainment program to millions who want it. They're real good at one-to-one communication. Isn't there a way we can work together and everybody get what they want? Okay, I'm out of time. Thank you very much.